Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
This is Mark Levine reporting live from a capital. It's not the nation's capital. Today I report live from Virginia's capital, from Richmond, Virginia. I'm actually sitting right now in the Virginia State Capitol, designed by Thomas Jefferson, and this is my first day here, officially, or probably unofficially, since I'm not quite a delegate yet, but first time actually attending the state's business. Many of you know that I won my Democratic primary in June to become a delegate in the state of Virginia, which is the state house. It's like some states have representatives, and we call ours delegates. The Virginia House of Delegates actually comes from the Virginia House of Burgesses, which was its former name, and is, in fact, the oldest Democratic body in the Western Hemisphere. So where I sit has a pretty important history. It's exciting for me. As I said, I'm the Democratic nominee. I don't have a Republican opponent, or any opponent for that matter, in November. So it's quite likely I will be elected in November unless Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, and any other write-in candidate were to beat me, which seems really unlikely. But I'm not a delegate yet, so I'm coming here mostly as an observer, and I have a lot to observe and to tell you, and frankly to deal with the fact that I'm a daily radio host and soon going to be a delegate. Most people here in the Virginia House of Delegates or in the Virginia Senate are part-timers. We generally only meet in January and February, which means that virtually all of us have other jobs. My other job is a talk radio host. It's a more unusual other job, but certainly everyone here pretty much has another job. In any case, we normally meet in January and February, and when I won my election in June, the House of Delegates, the Virginia General Assembly, wasn't scheduled to meet until next January. So most people thought the next time they met, I would be a sitting delegate. But there is a special session ordered by the governor, a very rare summer session, that has just been ordered, and that's what I'm attending. And what it is interesting, even if you're not from Virginia, and I know most of my listeners are not. Governor Terry McAuliffe was ordered by a federal court to basically call us into session right here in Richmond because the Republican districts, the ones that the Republican legislature, so let me explain Virginia. I probably should start there. The Virginia House of Delegates is controlled by the Republican Party. The Senate is barely controlled by the Republican Party, just by one seat, even though the statewide officials in Virginia have all been chosen by Democrats. There's a Democratic governor, that's Terry McAuliffe, a lieutenant governor, attorney general, two Democratic United States senators, and Virginia voted for Barack Obama twice in both his elections, both in 08 and 2012. So at the statewide level, Virginia generally votes for the Democrats, or at least has for the last 6 years or so. And I would call, therefore, Virginia an indigo state. Not quite purple, a little more blue than purple. Basically, we're split, but slightly more Democratic than Republican, maybe 52, 48, something like that. But because of the way the district lines are drawn, because Virginia is gerrymandered, and because, frankly, most of the Democrats live up in northern Virginia. We got some in Richmond. We got some in southeastern Virginia. I obviously met a lot of them today. I don't want to disrespect them at all. But clearly the strong Democratic sense comes from my region of Virginia. It comes from northern Virginia. And because of gerrymandering, because of incumbents protecting their districts, we have a very Republican House of Delegates. We also have a Republican congressional delegation. So there are 11 seats in Virginia, and those seats are divided on district lines. And you would think, given that Virginia is a purple state or indeed an indigo state, that we would have 6 Democrats and 5 Republicans. That would seem the ordinary way to split the state, pretty much half and half with a slight tendency towards the Democrats. But instead of having 6-5 Democrats, we have 8-3 Republicans. That's right. In a state that votes statewide for Democrats, the Republicans control 72% of the congressional districts. And the reason they do so is there is a district, the 3rd Congressional District. It's Congressman Bobby Scott's district. And that district basically stretches for hundreds of miles along the James River. And that district includes much of the African-American populations in Richmond, Petersburg, Newport News, and a lot of the cities along that river. The federal district court held that that district violated the Voting Rights Act. In other words, that by packing that many African-Americans into one district, it actually weakened their influence to have enough members that they chose in the surrounding districts. It was too gerrymandered, the court held. And so the court ordered the General Assembly, ordered the governor to draw new district lines. And there was ordered to do so by September 1st. So Terry McAuliffe went ahead and ordered that we all get together and draw new district lines. Well, the Republicans were not real happy about that. It is true, it's very rare to have a summer session in August, but given that the governor was just following the court order, I'm not sure he had much choice. But they decided to take it out on the governor by fighting him in a very different sphere. And again, if you're not from Virginia, the reason I'm explaining all this to you in detail is so you can understand how a state legislature works and how little things become big things and how things that we should all agree on become massive partisan conflict. And I'm learning, and mostly as an observer right now, but again, it's important, I think, to convey, and that's what I'm trying to give you, is an inside scoop, if not from Washington, then from Richmond today. So the Republicans decided to take revenge on the governor by removing his Supreme Court pick. So in July, when the General Assembly was not in session, and normally it's not in session in July, the governor of Virginia appointed a new Supreme Court justice, a woman by the name of Judge Rausch. And she was a very well-respected jurist, and is, perhaps I should say, she's a Supreme Court justice. She's certainly not dead. She's a well-respected jurist on both sides. She's not political. She was, in fact, endorsed by a Republican up in Northern Virginia, a relatively moderate Republican named Dave Alvo. And he didn't think it would be a problem. And according to the Virginia Constitution, the governor basically can appoint someone, and then that appointment remains unless and until the General Assembly votes that person up or down, much like, by the way, the president has the right to choose judges in recess until that's voted up or down by the Senate. Well, Governor McAuliffe made his appointment in July, and then the Republicans decided to challenge that, at least many Republicans decided to challenge that with their own pick, another judge by the name of Judge Alston. And this was seen by many as sort of a nakedly political move. In fact, at no time in the last 100 years has a sitting General Assembly in Richmond overturned the governor's decision. But they were determined to do it today, and that's what the battle was over this morning. They couldn't do it if they weren't called the session, but because they were upset about being called the session over the redistricting order by the court, they decided to respond by trying to remove Terry McAuliffe's judge, the justice on the state Supreme Court. That's what I saw this morning, and some very interesting thing happened, and I will be happy to tell you all the details of what happened right after the break. If you want to call in and join the discussion, I encourage you to do so. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275, and I'll be right back reporting live from Richmond right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Sitting on the Capitol grounds of the Virginia State Capitol right now, having just left a very interesting session this morning. where I got to sit on the floor. I even got to try out a delegate seat briefly while they're in recess. I don't officially become a delegate until next January. And I got to see partisan politics, well, the way partisan politics normally goes, I think, in Richmond and in most states around the United States. So I was describing before the break how Terry McAuliffe, the governor of Virginia, was ordered by a court to redesign the voting districts, the congressional voting districts in Virginia. Actually, it was the General Assembly of Virginia, in essence, was ordered to redesign its voting districts. It was too gerrymandered. And specifically, it was too gerrymandered based on race. This district, the 3rd Congressional District, grabbed every black person that the Republicans could find in much of Virginia, particularly all of Virginia, south of Northern Virginia. You basically go down from Richmond and grab them in Petersburg and grab them in Newport News and Norfolk, and it stretched all the way from the center of Virginia and Richmond down the river down to where it meets the ocean. Now, Virginia is not unique in this regard. I don't mean to cast aspersions on my state and make it seem any unusual. If you look at Florida or North Carolina or Georgia or actually practically any southern state, it seems they've done the same thing. Republicans know if they pack enough black people into one district, that one district will be solidly Democratic, to be sure. But all the surrounding districts will most likely be 55% or so Republican. And by doing that, they make sure that, well, in Virginia, a state that should be, based on its voting patterns, a 6-5 congressional delegation, 6 Democrats and 5 Republicans, instead gets 8 Republicans and 3 Democrats. Loss of 3 seats through nothing more than creative map making. The people of Virginia lean slightly toward the Democratic Party. The congressional delegation of Virginia is 73% Republican. And they packed them all into 3 tight congressional districts. They've also done some packing in the House of Delegates race as well. One reason why, when I won my Democratic primary, the election was over. Yeah, I have an election in November, but I'm the only person on the ballot. No Republican chooses to run, and who can blame them? Where I live in Northern Virginia, it is a very liberal area. Again, I love my home. I love how liberal it is. But I have more than enough Democrats to spare and would love to share them with neighboring districts so that we could get more Democrats elected in the Virginia House of Delegates. So the court ordered McAuliffe, really ordered Virginia, to redesign districts. McAuliffe ordered us back to the special session. Republicans were not happy about that. You see, they liked very much that even though the Democrats vote statewide and win statewide elections, they could still control 73% of our congressional delegation. Why would they change a nice, unfair situation that they created just because a judge wanted to obey the Voting Rights Act? Of course, the Voting Rights Act is that fantastic law of 1965 that came out of the civil rights demonstrations and movement. And basically, the law was designed precisely so that blacks could not only vote, but have their votes mean something, so they could have meaningful representation in states and throughout the United States. In any case, it was a very important court decision. The judge decided to order us back into town, and as I mentioned before, the Republicans decided to retaliate by removing one of Governor McAuliffe's recent Supreme Court picks on the Virginia Supreme Court, even though everyone had to concede that she was an excellent judge and excellent justice, and she really hadn't done anything wrong. She was about to become victim of politics. And so this morning, I came up, I drove to Richmond, I have been to House of Delegates, and that one is overwhelmingly Republican, and they made it very clear they were going to appoint another person in her stead. But the Senate is 21 Republicans and 19 Democrats. It used to be 20-20, as it happens. And we elected a lieutenant governor who breaks the tie, a Democratic lieutenant governor who's elected statewide. But the Republicans offered a job to a conservative Democrat in Southern Virginia. They offered him a job on a tobacco commission. They offered a judgeship to his daughter. And that Democrat decided to retire in a very conservative district, leaving it open so the Republicans could elect a 21-19. So they got a majority. And I hope all this detailed Virginia politics, hope you're following along, even if you're not from Virginia, because what it does is explain sort of how this works in states all across the country. In any case, the Senate is by one vote, Republican. It's 21-19. And one Republican announced that he didn't like all this political shenanigans. In fact, this Republican, a Senator Watkins, decided, and he's retiring from the Senate. And what's interesting is once you're retiring, you have power to do things that, well, no one else does. He's not going to have a primary challenge. He doesn't have to worry about raising money. He doesn't have to worry about having the Senate leadership tell him what to do. He is a free agent, and he had had enough. For more than 100 years, no sitting Supreme Court justice in the state of Virginia that had been appointed by the governor had ever been rejected by the General Assembly. It hadn't happened in more than a century, certainly hadn't happened in modern times, and particularly it hadn't happened when the justice hadn't done anything wrong, but was just a naked political challenge. And so Senator Watkins had enough. And just this morning, I'm proud to say, I'm happy to say, that in a 20-20 vote with the tie broken by the Democratic Lieutenant Governor, the Senate decided not to replace the Democratic Supreme Court Justice. But the battle's not over. You see, there's all kinds of shenanigans going on, and sometimes legislating is like a chess game. For example, if the House and the Senate decide not to adjourn, if the House decides to stay in session, that means that the governor can't reappoint someone in the recess. So they might do that. But the Senate, with Senator Watkins joining with 19 Democrats, may just decide to adjourn, in which case the governor could reappoint someone in the vacancy. And have you noticed that the whole question of redistricting got lost? That even though the purpose of our wonderful August session was to decide on these new boundaries, in fact, the only thing that was discussed so far, at least, was the Republicans' attempt to get rid of this justice appointed by the governor of Virginia. So what is happening with redistricting? Answer is, I still don't know. It looks like they may send it to committee. The Democrats have put forward their plan. The Republicans don't want to put forward, at least it appears at this moment, don't want to put forward any plan at all. At least they have not as of now. What that means is probably if the Democrats put forward a plan and Republicans don't put forward a plan, that all of this will go back to the same court who decided the case in the first place, which wouldn't be such a bad thing, because if they do, then the court will probably determine a district that's more fair and basically spread the African-American population in Virginia among the various communities in which they live. And that way they'll be defined by their community, Richmond or Petersburg or Norfolk or Hampton Roads, wherever they live, rather than by the fact of their race. And in doing so, we will probably pick up at least one, maybe two, heck, maybe three congressional seats. So it's interesting to see how it all works out. And I'm an observer. I tested out a delegate chair today, I have to admit, but I don't get to actually sit here until January. And so right now, I'm just sort of exploring how it all works. I invite you to call in and ask questions. And if you want to talk about this, or frankly, any matter of partisanship, maybe in your home state, maybe gerrymandering, maybe choice of judges, whatever it is, feel free to call in. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. And like I said, if the sound's not that clear, it's because I'm sitting here live in Richmond and trying to give you the best that I can. You can also send me a tweet at Mark Levine Talk, and they'll let me know. I'm just talking on my cell phone, folks, but they'll let me know as best they can what you tweeted. Best way, though, is to call in and add your 2 cents. And I hope to hear from you right after this.
Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from Richmond, where I've seen my first, well, legislating firsthand, and it's been very interesting. People have been very nice to me. I've even met a couple of Republicans. I'm going to try to build on those relationships, but it just is interesting to, I guess, see some of the partisan bickering firsthand. Really, I don't think this should be that complex. It's something where the gerrymandering went too far. The court ordered it. It's not the governor's fault. They need to fix it. That's what the law is. That's what the Voting Rights Act is. And on the other question, one of the judges, well, the judge appointed this woman, and there's really no problems with her. And the tradition in Virginia has been to let that sit. So I certainly hoping that will continue to happen. I tell you this, I want to play a clip for you, and I know Mark Grimaldi has it teed up, just of what it was like going into this session to get you an idea of how it's been reported in the press. Mark, can you play that clip?
Good evening, Casey. And today, Judge Jane Marum Roush was met with a groundswell of support in the state capitol. That's coming from key Republicans and Democrats in Virginia. Today, she took the time to thank them and many folks from her professional and personal life.
I can't really say this is a dream come true, because my dreams never went this far.
UVA Law School graduate and longtime Fairfax Judge Jane Marum Roush says she is deeply honored to be named to Virginia's Supreme Court.
Governor, I'm grateful for the confidence that you've placed in me. I will do my utmost to justify that confidence.
Roush received endorsements from both sides of the political aisle.
Very enthusiastic about the selection of Judge Roush. She's an exceptionally experienced trial judge who has handled every major type of case imaginable, from corporate matters to murder cases.
Those cases include the trial of D.C. sniper Lee Boyd Malvo. But before her years as a judge in one of Virginia's busiest courtrooms, she also worked as an attorney and earned degrees from Wellesley and the UVA School of Law.
I spent three of the most delightful years of my life in Charlottesville.
That time is special to her for another reason. It's when she married her husband of almost 36 years.
As a judge, I make decisions for a living, but by far, this is the part where I knew I was going to cry, but by far the best decision I've ever made is to marry my husband, David Roush, who's with me today.
To make it to the Supreme Court of Virginia is very special, quite emotional.
Now, Jane Roush is scheduled to come back and join the full panel of judges, which is seven members, on August 1st. She will need General Assembly approval, though, for this appointment to take full effect. Now, the legislature is tentatively scheduled to come back next month.
So you hear from the clip, it makes it very clear, this is a very well-respected judge, this is someone who no one had any complaints about, this is someone with support from both sides of the aisle, this is a trial judge, a very famous one who dealt with some really difficult cases, including the trial of the Washington, D.C. sniper. You heard the story of the trial of Malvo. So really, no one expected this to be a problem. You hear at the end, it says that, yeah, the governor's appointment is temporary, pending the General Assembly. But again, for 100 years in Virginia, that appointment process has been respected. Had her appointment gone down, that, I think, would have set in stone a new Virginia principle, throwing away 100 years of history, that basically the governor's appointment deserves no respect, and that it should simply be ignored, and it really would change Virginia history. And one of the things I think that you learn working in a legislature is that precedent matters, even precedent on things that you don't like very much. One thing I found very interesting this morning that truly surprised me was the Senate decided there was a motion before the Senate to hear Judge Roush to see if she was qualified to actually have a session on whether to approve her before the Virginia General Assembly. And the governor had appointed her and had asked that she be considered, and one of the Democrats filed a motion to ask that she be considered. Now, there's a Senate rule. And a Senate rule is that if someone asks for a judge to be considered, that judge must be considered. That's the rules. That's the rules of Virginia. But to a lot of people's surprise, the leader in the Senate, the Republican leader, said that the motion was out of order. And that was that. It seems that the Virginia Senate doesn't have to follow its own rules. Presumably the Virginia House doesn't have to follow its own rules. That was a real lesson for me today. In Congress, you can more or less force people to abide by the rules. In Virginia, apparently, the rules have virtually no meaning. The Senate is run by the leader of the Senate. The House is run by the leader of the House, the Speaker of the House. And what they say goes. And they can't even apparently vote on whether or not a rule has been followed or not. I'm learning. I may have this a little bit wrong. I'm trying to follow it here. But I was surprised that the Senate leader could just ignore the rules. After all, rules are supposed to be rules for a reason. I should tell you this, if I was surprised, virtually no one else was. Everyone seemed to understand that the rules are not rules. There may be guidelines, but at the end of the day, they mean virtually nothing at all, and people can do, well, the leaders of these bodies can do practically whatever they want. they weren't surprised, I was surprised. So that's one lesson I learned the hard way. If you want to call in and comment on this, or gerrymandering, or partisan politics, or what's going on in your state, feel free to call in 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. On the phone is someone who is probably my most frequent caller over the 12 years I've been on radio. Dave from Humboldt County, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Happiness, Mark. You got to my call this time. I am convinced that in a real democracy, an honest democracy, you should end up with a government made up of people that largely speak for and represent the interest of the majority of the people. And that's not happening much in this country anymore. What we're getting is a 1% that ends up with 51% of the power in the government. And that makes me say, we got to take a serious look at what is going on and why is that happening. I know money plays a part in it. I know that we get lied to and we can be awful stupid when we go to the ballot box. But I put top priority is this electronic voting. I do believe that they insisted on having it, that they can and do flip votes. And I see that happening. And if we don't do something about it, this country is on a race to down a rat hole. How do we ever hope to save it if we don't look that problem squarely in the face and do something about it? You could draft.
Well, Dave and I, you and I have long agreed on electronic voting and that there should be a paper record. And I should note that in my area of Virginia, in Northern Virginia, it is all done through paper records. Every single person who voted for me voted on a paper ballot that could be verified. Maybe that's why I won the election, Dave, but they couldn't cheat in my election. But I do have to say this. Electronic voting is slowly dying. It's a good thing. You and I and many, many others are working to kill it so that it can't flip votes, so that they can't cheat. And that's a good thing, and it is happening. And every year we get less and less electronic voting and more paper voting. The way we do it in Northern Virginia is you fill out a ballot, you basically fill out the ovals, and it's electronically counted. But if anyone challenges the count, we actually have the paper records to prove the count. So it's really hard to cheat. All that being said, Dave, there are issues beyond electronic voting, because even if the people fairly vote, even if in Virginia the majority of Virginians vote for Democrats, by drawing district lines, and anyone who wants to explore this can simply make their own map, and put a bunch of Democrats, Republicans in there. Just make a map of your state and put in 100 X's, or so let's say 52 X's for Democrats and 48 Y's for Republicans. And you'll see that depending on how you draw it into 10 equal states, you could get 7 or 8 Republican seats. Drawing the district lines means that even if we have fair voting, as we certainly do in Northern Virginia, that doesn't mean that they can't manipulate the system to make sure that it's unfairly counted. And it's all, the difference is that it's all done the light of day. Unlike what you're talking about, Dave, where people are flipping votes and secretly, this is all done right there in the open. If you look at districts, and again, look at Virginia, look at North Carolina, look at Pennsylvania, look at Florida, look at Georgia, you will see these long, winding districts that often stretch for hundreds of miles, and they're very, very weirdly drawn, generally drawn to include all black voters in one district. And I have a good feeling that if this case is upheld by the United States Supreme Court, and I think it may be, that might undo district lines in Alabama, Georgia, and North Carolina throughout the South, where they've been packing blacks into a single district. So but my point, though, is that totally apart from electronic voting, you can still cheat the system, and gerrymandering is as old, well, as America. The word gerrymander comes from a district done by Elbridge Gerry, the governor of Massachusetts, that was shaped like a salamander. It was called a gerrymander, and it happened 200 years ago. So this kind of stuff isn't anything new, unfortunately, in American politics.
Well, I know there's different ways of cheating, Mark, and certainly gerrymandering is one of them, and lying to us on public, a lot of the media is another. But I got to explain and understand in my head how the average struggling person goes into a polling booth and votes for somebody that says, I am all for the billionaires, and I want to take more out of your earnings, more away from your health care, more away from your Social Security, and give more to the billionaires. And somehow that person is getting elected in a democracy.
Well, and that's got to put it that way. I mean, look at someone like Donald Trump, right? That man is a billionaire, literally a billionaire. And he's someone who certainly isn't looking out for the common person, but you find a lot of people, people who are not billionaires, frankly, people who tend to be some of the lesser educated, like him. And they like him because he's brash, because he tells off the establishment. They like his sort of gumption. They like that. And they're willing to overlook policies that hurt their economic interests. Frankly, Donald Trump's charm, and it's a weird thing to use that word with him because I don't find him particularly charming, but his personality, I guess I do find him humorous, is winning over policy. You never hear Donald Trump talk much about policy. It's all about personality, and that wins votes, like it or not.
Yeah, well, you know, there is the one thing about all the Republicans. He's the least owned by the big corporate bureaucracy, He's owned by himself. He's got his
own. That's true. And that there's an appealing element to that, even to me. There's an appealing element to the fact that you know that Donald Trump is not controlled by the establishment. And that's really cool, even if he's got some really weird ideas about Mexicans or women or anything else like that. I certainly wouldn't vote for Donald Trump, but I have to admit he does have a certain appeal precisely because he isn't owned by the established interests. And you mentioned money, Dave. This is something that, as a sitting delegate, or I will be a sitting delegate in January, everything's about money now. Everything's about lobbyists. Everything's about donations. Everything. That's what people talk about. They talk about races, and they talk about how much money we need for each race. And unfortunately, it seems that there's more talk about money than there is about actually doing things to help people, which is why I ran for office. So I wanted to help my constituents. And that's the system we have. It's not just Virginia. I don't mean to pick on my home state. It's true in every one of the 50 states. It's true in Congress. We have legislatures that, because money controls so much in politics, care more about money than they do about helping people. And I'm not casting aspersions on any one person in particular. I think it's our system. That's how our system is designed. And that's why I think we'll never really gain back our democracy until we start getting money out of the system.
Well, it's still not computing to me, though, because it's got to be a thinking element. I know that an awful lot of us are lied to and go in to the voting booth stupid. That happens. But you got to think there's enough thinking people to offset it that say, I care about us. I care about us having decent wages and health care and job assurances. And I'm not caring about making more money for that greedy billionaire class up there. I got to think that the majority of people have that thought in their head. Bernie should
well,
be a
Well, you know, the other thing, Dave, is this. Maybe a majority do, and there's a reason why President Obama won his elections in relative landslides. I mean, he won by much greater numbers than George Bush did. He won even by more than Bill Clinton did. But one of the problems with our voters, Democrats, is that, unfortunately, many of us only turn out in presidential years. We're only showing up in November every 4 years. Well, elections occur all the time. They occur in primaries. Primaries matter. Whether it's a presidential primary, whether it's your gubernatorial primary, your senatorial primary, whether it's your delegate primary. The reason I am sitting here on a park bench outside the state capitol in Richmond is because voters in my hometown of Alexandria, Virginia, decided that they were going to vote in a June 2015 primary, because that's when our election was held. Not November of a presidential year, in June of an odd year. And unfortunately, too many Democrats are choosing not to vote in off years, not to vote even in the even years that aren't divisible by four. And that's why we lose Congress. That's why we lost Congress in 2010. That's why we didn't do well in 2014. I'm tired of Democrats claiming they care, but only voting once every 4 years. Please, if you hear my voice, check when there's an election, wherever you live in the United States of America, and get out there and vote. You have no right to complain if you don't get out and vote in every single election where they let you vote. And please, as a state delegate, vote in your state races, vote in your local races, vote for mayor, vote for city council, vote for county board, vote for the school board. Your vote does matter, and frankly, it matters more in the local races than even the presidential race. I'm just tired of Democrats only voting once every 4 years. And then we wonder why all these bad things happen and why Republicans control Congress.
Hallelujah. So I certainly agree with you, Mark. And I know you asked the question, how could it possibly be that in this democracy we ended up with a George Bush and a Dick Cheney, and then they got reelected? How could that happen?
Well, in that particular case, it's because the Supreme Court overruled the people's choice. When the people voted for Al Gore in 2000, both by popular vote and by electoral vote, because he won in Florida, and the Supreme Court overruled it. But they could overrule it because it was so close. We've got to win elections beyond the margin of cheating, and that's the message I want to get out today. Dave, I got to take a break. Folks, if you want to join the conversation, you can do so. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Mark Levin reporting live from Richmond, not the nation's capital, but it is the Virginia state capital, where I expect to be a delegate starting in January, getting a dry run for how the system works. And they say you should never watch sausage or legislation be made up close. I saw a little bit up and close and personal today. Call in 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Charles from New Mexico, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going? I'm glad to hear that Virginia's going the way it's going, because it's about time. Maybe Tennessee and Kentucky will follow suit. Who knows? But as far as gerrymandering is concerned, I'm all for a constitutional amendment that outlaws gerrymandering.
I would be fine with that, too. And actually, it may end up requiring that. The problem is that a constitutional amendment to be passed requires a two-thirds vote of both houses of Congress. And the Republicans have been using gerrymandering very well. Now, there are a few Democratic states that are gerrymandered, but not that many. In fact, the only one I can think of is Maryland, and that's like one seat, whereas Republicans have gerrymandered Florida and Alabama and Georgia and North Carolina and Michigan and Pennsylvania. And what's fascinating about it is that if you look at the 2012 election returns, more people voted for Democrats in the House of Representatives than voted for Republicans, just by sheer numbers, but they got more seats. Entirely because of dry district lines. So it's really hard to get a constitutional amendment passed when Republicans are using it so well to their advantage.
Well, I agree. Both parties have used it, but the Republicans have taken to an art form where beyond where it should be. And that's my opinion.
Yeah, what they do is they tend to take a district line and they go out into a river or an ocean for 200 miles, come back in, grab a black neighborhood, go back out of the river. Maybe the answer is you shouldn't be able to go along a waterway more than, say, 10 miles or something. You know, just cross the water if you need to, but don't follow it along. I mean, look at the 3rd Congressional District on a map, and you'll see it just goes along the river. Well, unless you live on a houseboat, that includes no one. How can you have a district that includes no one and then call it contiguous? Maybe something like that could be a judge-made doctrine, but at the end of the day, we need to reclaim our state legislatures. It's the only way to stop this gerrymandering. And please, that's what I'm trying to remind people, to get out and vote, particularly your state legislatures, because a lot of people only vote in the presidential race, and they don't realize how much power they're giving up when they don't vote in the other elections.
Tell people, I says, you know, if you don't believe your vote doesn't count, look at the Koch brothers. They spend billions of dollars to influence that vote, so it does count, and it does mean a lot. So I'm with you. Vote off season and vote out as much as you can.
Well, the Koch brothers, I understand that their vote counts. Thank you for your call, Charles. This is Mark Levin. Follow me on Twitter at Mark Levin Talk, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.